With What's News, I'm Charlie Turner in New York for the Wall Street Journal. Bitcoin turns 10 years old, but is the cryptocurrency being used as it was intended to be used? The Journal's Paul Vigna will join us. First, some top news headlines. The Wall Street Journal says Robert Bowers, the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting suspect, has been indicted on 44 counts. A federal grand jury indicted the gunman on charges including hate crimes. Bowers could face the death penalty in Saturday's shooting deaths of 11 people. The Florida man accused of mailing bombs to prominent Democrats started planning what prosecutors called a domestic terrorist attack as early as July and kept lists on his laptop with the addresses of his intended victims, according to a new court filing. Cesar Sayoc was arrested in Florida last week and charged with five federal crimes. In a letter to a Florida judge, prosecutors from New York, where Mr. Sayoc is expected to be tried, asked he be held in jail while awaiting trial. Prosecutors said the bombs, sent in manila envelopes to at least 15 intended victims, including two former presidents, were clearly dangerous and intended to maximize harm. General Motors' third-quarter operating profit jumped 25% as the automaker sold more pricey trucks and sport utility vehicles in its home U.S. market. GM earned a record $3.2 billion for the quarter. Separately, the Wall Street Journal says GM will offer buyouts to some North American salaried workers in a cost-cutting move. Around 18,000 GM workers are eligible. Next up, Bitcoin turns 10 years old. This is What's News from the Wall Street Journal. Happy birthday, Bitcoin. The digital currency turns 10 years old, and since its beginnings on October 31st, 2008, Bitcoin has become a ginormous topic of interest. But the Wall Street Journal's Paul Vigna says Bitcoin still has not become what it was meant to be, and that's a payment system. Paul joins us via Skype. Paul, I know you love the fact that Bitcoin started on Halloween. The last I checked, it was trading at around $6,200, $6,300 a coin. For starters, briefly tell us how Bitcoin began.
Sure. So on October 31st, 2008, a person or a group of people, we still don't know, calling themselves Satoshi Nakamoto, releases a 9-page white paper, which is basically just a draft report of this thing called Bitcoin. They put it out on this mailing list that cryptographers subscribe to, and it doesn't get a lot of notice. And it's funny, I've talked to a lot of the people who are on that early list, and almost all of them were dismissive of it. This whole idea of digital money, which is what Bitcoin was supposed to be, it was supposed to be a digital version of cash that you could use online. The twist, of course, is that it was designed in such a way that you would not need a government intermediary backing it and guaranteeing it. So the idea of that had actually existed since at least the mid-90s. People had been trying to build a digital cash that didn't need government backing for a long time. So by the time Nakamoto comes around in 2008 and releases this thing, people had already seen several other attempts at it, and they had all failed. So everybody was kind of dismissive of Bitcoin. But the fact of the matter is, for what it was supposed to be originally, it actually does work. The network allows any two people anywhere in the world, as long as you have an internet connection, to exchange value directly. Just you and me, Charlie, if I wanted to send you $5 worth of Bitcoin, no matter where you are, I could send you $5 worth of Bitcoin, and nobody else can see that transaction. And I'm actually saying that incorrectly, but because everyone can see it, because the actual transaction history is public. But the idea was that you and I can do it anonymously. Nobody can track us doing it. And again, I'm saying that incorrectly, because the fact is you can track the transactions, but the identities of people were not tied to those transactions. So it was kind of pseudonymous, the network itself. So the first several years, it's really just kind of a techie project. It doesn't get a ton of attention.
I assume it broke into the mainstream when, you know, quite a few companies started accepting Bitcoin as a form of payment on everyday transactions. When was that?
That was around 2013, 2014. And those companies were kind of following it, because it did start getting out into the mainstream before then. The price started to go up. People were talking about it. The name, the word Bitcoin, started getting out of these small circles it was in and into wider and wider circles. And that was when I heard about it for the first time. It was early 2013. And it started to kind of get into the mainstream, this idea of a currency that doesn't need a government backing, that is not something that you know, the government can just inflate away, that it's not something that banks can just kind of park themselves on top of and become a rentier, as they say. So 2013, 2014, it starts getting to the mainstream. Businesses start experimenting with it. Dell starts accepting it online. Microsoft starts accepting it online. Expedia starts accepting it for hotel bookings. They were testing it out also. So you have a lot of people starting to try to use it, companies starting to try to accept it, and you sort of had this swell underneath it. And at that point, it really did kind of seem like Bitcoin was going to become this monetary standard.
At some point, Bitcoin encountered a lot of hurdles in attempting to become a common form of payment. There was that, and then I believe there was the manic rise in its price. Why don't you go over that?
Right. There were three kind of buckets of things that hurt Bitcoin. The first bucket of things, I would say, was just the user experience. It was very difficult to use. Nobody had really built a very good, elegant, simple, secure mobile app. I think of it a lot like, you know, cars in the 1890s when they were very new things. And you had to know everything about the car. You had to have your own tools. You had to be able to run it. And most people didn't have cars because they were too difficult to maintain. They were kind of odd and unusual, and nobody really knew what they were. And that was Bitcoin in the early years. So it was hard to use. The other thing is, if you're talking about an open marketplace of competing payment systems, Bitcoin also had some things going against it. Well, it had some things going for it, essentially that, you know, no government could come in and confiscate your Bitcoin, which is a really nice thing. It was portable, which is a really nice thing. It was digital. It had things going against it. It was not as easy to use as a credit card. It was not as easy to use as PayPal. If your Bitcoin gets stolen, it is stolen. There's no chargebacks. You can't call up your credit card company and say, somebody stole my Bitcoins, can I have them back, and you get them back. It just doesn't work. Credit cards also offer perks that Bitcoin didn't offer. You know, you can get miles, you can get loyalty points. So in sort of an open marketplace of competition among payment systems, Bitcoin had some problems there also. And the third thing that really squelched its growth, in my opinion, was internal squabbling among the people who were trying to build Bitcoin. And there was a big, nasty fight about how to scale Bitcoin. You basically had two camps. You had one camp that wanted to increase the number of transactions it could handle at any one time, make it really fast, really big, allow these businesses to be able to use it at scale. And you had another camp that said, no, we don't want that kind of growth that soon. We're still trying to build this out. We want it to be secure. We want it to be like the Rock of Gibraltar before we scale it out. And they had a big, ugly fight. And that fight headbutted up against what you were talking about, which was this price rally in, said, 2017. So 2017, Bitcoin goes parabolic. The price goes flying up. And parabolic, I meant that because it comes back down later. But it goes flying up in 2017. Everything else, you know, there's all these other Bitcoin competitors, digital currencies. Everything's going up. So what happens is a lot of people start buying Bitcoin. A lot of people want to use Bitcoin. You have more traffic on the network. That traffic hits this low transaction limit that I was talking about before, and you have these incredible bottlenecks. And what happens is the Bitcoin network is completely choked off, and nobody can use it for any kind of actual transactions. Now it is taking hours and days to confirm a transaction. There are fees associated with Bitcoin transactions. They're supposed to be a couple of pennies. It's supposed to be virtually nothing, but these fees, because of the bottleneck, were running up to 10, 20 at the top, the very, very top of the market. It hit $54 per transaction. It just completely broke people's interest in using Bitcoin. So at the end of 2017, what happens is you have this incredible price run, which a lot of it came back, but you know it's still trading around 6,300. You had this incredible price run, but you also had this currency that was just, it had no real daily utility. And businesses stopped accepting it. Expedia dropped it very quietly. They just dropped it. Dell dropped it. Microsoft still accepts it, but they wouldn't tell me how many people are actually using it. I don't think a lot of people are using it. The one great example, and I put it in my story, is an online booking service called CheapAir. And they use it, and the CEO loves it. But even he admitted that they don't have a lot of customers using it.
Well, how are Bitcoin's backers currently touting the cryptocurrency, if not as a payment system?
So what happened in the wake of this, because this scaling debate ended with the side that didn't want to expand Bitcoin's transaction capacity winning. So now Bitcoin is very slow to use. If there's any real traffic on it, it gets backed up. So what they are now promoting it as is a store of value. This is a place to park your assets. And there are some benefits to that. Again, like I said, it's digital. It's mobile. You can take it and move it. You have access to, you know, your liquid capital. You know, there are some benefits to it, but there are also, again, some detriments to it. If you're talking about, if you're comparing Bitcoin to a traditional store of value, a stock, a bond, you know, cash, U.S. dollar, it does not, you know, really compare well to those things. It doesn't pay you a dividend like a stock would. It doesn't give you interest like a bond would. There's no guarantee you're going to get your money back like with a bond. Bitcoin is still very volatile. Yeah, it was up about 1,500% in 2017. Well, it was down about 70% in 2018. So it's very volatile. It's not a safe place to put your money. So they're now trying to promote it as a store of value. And you see a lot of businesses are trying to build their businesses around the idea that you're going to have Bitcoin become an institutional grade asset that is going to be attractive to hedge funds, to family offices, to institutional type clients. I don't know if that's going to work. I mean, I think that's kind of a stretch in terms of a selling point.
Wall Street Journal reporter Paul Vigna joining us via Skype. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
And that's What's News. I'm Charlie Turner in New York for The Wall Street Journal.